unfiltered, uncensored. Ready to take on the issues the mainstream media is afraid to engage in. Bringing you the hard-hitting truth. This is the Mass Resistance Radio Program. On Boston's 1330 WRCA. Now, your host and voice of the Mass Resistance Movement, Brian Kamiker.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Kamiker, and you are listening to Radio Free Massachusetts, Mass Resistance Radio, here on WRCA 1330 on your dial. This is heard every Saturday from 11 a.m. till noon. And around Saturday evening, we get it up on the Mass Resistance website, massresistance.org, where you can hear this and all our other shows going back. Go to our Mass Resistance website, and you will hear the latest of what's going on. You can get involved, and you can donate. Go to our Mass Resistance blog at massresistance.net. I'm here with Amy.
This is Amy here.
Ms. Mass Resistance blog. And we have a very, very interesting show. Who do we have?
We have two special guests from Watertown, John Dimascio and Ralph Felicia. And they're going to talk about the No Place for Hate controversy there, especially in Watertown, but it's really all over Massachusetts and all over the country.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting on how basically these two guys got something started that has actually become an international incident. The ambassador to Turkey has gotten involved, the ambassador to Israel. It's become, national news.
And this is an example of great grassroots activism.
Right. And it's an example that, you can get something done. But first, let's talk about some things that have happened this week. On Monday, this was very disturbing. Greater Boston PFLAG had their annual meeting.
PFLAG is parents, friends, family of lesbians and gays, but they're also friends of transsexuals, bisexuals, and the New England Leather Alliance is big in their regional conference.
And that's the S&M
that's
group.
The BDSM people.
Right.
And they're also into promoting polyamory.
Yeah. BDSM polygamy. Is people who beat each other for sexual gratification.
Bear in mind, PFLAG had their big conference November of 2006 called Transcending Boundaries. Go on the web and find Transcending Boundaries 2006 and look at their seminar topics, their workshop topics. For instance, those things I just mentioned are there.
Right.
How to have swinging parties without getting in trouble with the police. They also had the doctor from Children's Hospital that we've talked about who was giving hormone-blocking drugs to little children. They have a clinic at Children's Hospital doing that. Because they're identified as transgender children, this will make their later surgeries more easy since they won't actually enter puberty properly. So that's what PFLAG is all about.
And why was this meeting so? First of all, the other thing, of course, is PFLAG is in most of the school systems in Massachusetts and even around the country. But they're certainly are in my kid's school.
They give diversity training, diversity assemblies, training for the administrators and teachers.
They draw kids into these behaviors. The other thing is that on the Massachusetts. What's the latest name of that commission?
The Commission on Gay and Lesbian Youth, but they want to add bisexual and transgender.
Right. They have four seats on this official organization that makes public policy.
The highest representation of any named group on that commission.
So at this meeting, which was publicized quite well, they had a panel discussion led by Senator Robert Antonioni, who is the Senate Chairman of the Education Committee. And Antonioni, I don't know.
The very fact that he would associate with PFLAG so openly is shocking to me.
Right.
Because we just described who they are and what kind of workshops they hold.
Right. One of the things, by the way, before I get to his participation, is they were talking about a book called Courting Equality, which they are going to place in every public high school in Massachusetts that they can, and in libraries through their homosexual clubs, that is basically pretty hardcore propaganda on the homosexual marriage issue. But Antonioni got in, and from we're putting up a full report of this on the Mass Resistance website, but it was really shocking and offensive, the kinds of things that he was saying. He has essentially been, over the last few years, one of the most arrogant, sneering, and abusive members of the legislature toward the pro-family position. And as his position as chairman of this committee, the condescension in his eyes is just... It's just terrible.
Yeah, you do see it in his face, and let's just say he doesn't exactly welcome testimony from the side opposing his views.
Right.
Very close-minded fellow.
And so he basically assured them that he would push the homosexual agenda in the public schools. He assured them that their various bills in the legislature, which we're putting up, he's going to see that they get through as much as he can. And he also said that he's going to do what he can to stop the parents' rights bill. He basically said he was going to stop it, said he was going to try to work with others to stop it. And he particularly talked about mass resistance and about me. You know, I guess his remarks were that when we came in and gave testimony on the parents' rights bill, that he said that we were beyond the pale. And, you know, it's absurd. I mean, the testimony we gave was simply facts. He considers it beyond the pale, he told this homosexual group. And he said about mass resistance, give them enough room and they will defeat themselves. That's what he told this homosexual organization about mass resistance. Well, we'll see, Senator Antonioni. But I might add that I actually showed up there, and I was thrown out of the meeting immediately.
You need to get some plastic surgery, Brian. You're too recognizable.
Well, the Bay Windows newspaper had advertised it as a public event. And I would think that if you have an event...
No, Brian. You're not part of the public. You're beyond the pale.
I guess I'm beyond the pale.
But
they said that since you don't agree with us, you can't be here. Luckily, there were people there. But, you know, the idea of a group that gets public funds, that makes public policy, that is in the high schools, and that has a leadership, a member of the leadership of the legislature speaking, and that the public can't even see this, there's something really wrong. What are they trying to hide? Well, we know what they're trying to hide. They're trying to hide what,
perversion.
Yeah, what they're doing. And so we're going to have more of this on the Mass Resistance website. But this was Monday night. And you need to get involved, ladies and gentlemen. So what else is going on? Next week we have our
the forum
for the Laramie Project
at the Acton Boxborough High School in Acton. And needless to say, with the help of Google, it's real easy to find that the GLBTQ community, they're trying to get together a little protest. Or maybe it's a big protest. We're not quite sure. But the person, the screen name of the person who posted this, Edible Skittle Titties. Yeah. Can I say that on the radio, Brian?
These are the people that are organizing a protest. Now let's understand what it is. The school is putting on the Laramie Project, which is a very vulgar, very violent play, and several parents in the community of Acton have asked them not to put it on, and they said, no, we're going to put it on.
Well, what the play does, it's about the murder of Matthew Shepard, which was indeed a horrific crime, but they're trying to say that this could happen anywhere, and they're saying that the seeds of hate are present in the Acton-Boxborough community. So, in fact, we'll be talking about this whole concept of hate in the community. That's what the whole No Place for Hate business is about, saying that every community is capable of these hideous, violent acts, right, specifically directed towards the GLBTQ community. Well, that's perfect nonsense, but at any rate, that's what the play is about, so this is why the community is turning out. Skittle Titties has said that we are a homophobic group, and there will be some sort of a non-violent passive statement made during the seminar at question time.
Yeah.
Now, very interesting, they're planning to meet at the tennis courts there at the high school, and it says, dress more on the conservative side in order for the panel to take us seriously. Does that mean that they take the panel seriously?
Yeah. So, well, let me just back up a session. So anyway, the parents have decided, and you know, they asked us to get involved, to have a forum, a public forum in Acton on that night at the Acton-Boxborough Regional High School. to give the other side. Basically, here are the facts about the play that you're not hearing from them. And the school said, okay, we'll let you do it. Apparently, the homosexual groups, many of these not even from Acton, have decided that we can't tolerate people hearing the truth.
Well, on this live journal posting, I just got to give you the screen names of some of the other people who might be at the demonstration. Boston Androdyke plans to be there. I guess that's a she. I'm not quite sure. That person, Boston Androdyke, is informing people on the GLSEN board, friends of hers or maybe his, friends at the Fenway Community Health Center, and at Bagley.
Yeah.
So they're spreading this all over. So, and another person, screen name D-Bang. D-Bang calls it a bigot panel that will be taking place.
In other words, name-calling, the usual tactics that most people really don't know how to deal with, because you don't see that in America. You don't see normal people using these kinds of really disgusting tactics of trying to malign people and demonize people simply because they don't want a message to be heard.
Here's the deal. We really want to invite Skittle Titties, D-Bang, and Boston Androdyke to come into the forum. Please come in, listen. You'll probably hear things you've never heard before. That's the point of the forum. And, we'd love to have them there as
Wednesday
respectful
night.
Respectful participants.
What time is
Wednesday
it?
Night, October 3rd, starting at 7:30.
And you can, you can read more about this on the Mass Resistance website. We've got a really great rest of the show with John DiMaggio and Ralph Felicia on the... They're going to be here in studio with us on the ADL, No Place for Hate. We've talked about that in some of our previous shows. These are the guys that got it started. They can talk about what's going on in the community. We're going to take a quick break, and they're going to be with us. This is Brian Kamenker, Mass Resistance Radio. We'll be right back. And we're back. Brian Kamenker, Mass Resistance Radio here in WRCA. Faithful listeners of this show will remember some weeks ago we talked about the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, and their problems with their No Place for Hate program, which is starting to get kicked out of various towns, starting in Watertown, and now I guess it's been Newton and Belmont and I think Needham. Is it Needham?
I'm not sure.
No, Needham has not yet.
How about Arlington? Arlington?
Yeah, Arlington.
Yeah, I thought so.
Uh-huh. Several of the towns have started throwing them out, and at the issue has been the Armenian genocide of 1915 and their opinion as to whether it was really a genocide or wasn't, and then they changed their minds, and it's become a huge, even international incident. And I wrote a piece in the Jewish Advocate, which is the... a major Jewish newspaper in Massachusetts, called the ADL Gives Jews a Bad Name, which basically talked about this No Place for Hate and what it really is, and some other things. You can see that on our website, massresistance.org. But we're really pleased today to have the two guys that got this whole thing started, John DiMaggio and Ralph Felicia, Watertown residents who... made all of this happen, alerted the community, and got the ball rolling. Thank you guys for coming into studio here.
You're welcome.
Well, tell us what happened.
Well, at the very beginning...
This is Ralph, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. At the very beginning, it was in the end of April. I was going through Watertown Square, and just by chance, I happened to see the sign on the telephone pole, around the light pole in front of the administration building. It said, "This is a No Place to Hate community." And I had never seen it before, didn't know what it was all about, and I stopped the car, went into the administration building and asked a few people what the sign was all about. And surprisingly, most of them didn't even know there was a sign out there, believe it or not. But I finally found someone who knew what it was about, and they directed me to the town manager's office. And he told me what was going on, and he gave me a copy of the proclamation that the town had signed with the Anti-Defamation League. I took it home and read it, and I couldn't believe it.
Now, I think you have that right here. What are some of the things on this thing that sort of struck you?
Well, what struck me was the whole thing in general. What it was doing was criminalizing other people's points of view. In other words, they were saying that we can't put up with any kind of feelings or thoughts or speech against certain things. And I'm looking at it, and I said, well, gee whiz, I feel just the opposite on most of these things. They made a criminal out of me without me knowing it. And so I immediately questioned it, and
I went before
the town council
in
May 8th, I think it was.
Okay.
And I told him, I said, you know, I became aware of this, and I feel it's an infringement upon my rights as an individual. According to the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, it's an infringement on my rights to freedom of speech and expression. I think you ought to get rid of this. And I find it offensive. I think that, you know, being offensive, offended, that's the magic words nowadays. If you're offended, everybody stops dead, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I expect this to be gone in 30 days, because if it's not, we might have a problem. Well, the town council ignored me, and then 30 days went by, and I asked one or two other councilors, whatever happened to that? And so they're nothing. They just ignored you. Well, I was sort of stuck at the moment, and I wanted to make a more of a public protest, so I bought myself a Confederate flag. And I hung it up on my porch over the front lawn as my sign of rebellion against what the town was doing. And I only picked that because it's known as a rebel flag, so I figured I'm rebelling, good enough.
So in other words, they had their No Place for Hate banner.
Right.
And you were saying, okay, if you want to put up banners, I'll put up a banner.
I'll put up my flag, and I said the flag is going to stay up until the sign goes down.
Okay.
And as it turned out, I finally took the flag down the day after the sign went down.
So, oh, it did get down. Yeah, they did take it down.
They took the sign down,
Wow.
Finally, when they voted, you know, because of the Armenian question.
Oh, so it took a while.
That night, yeah, it took a couple of weeks. But that night, they took the sign down. In fact, I was out there on the street, and I saw them taking it down. And the next day, I took down my flag. Yeah. Okay, fine.
Okay.
I'd like to just backtrack a little bit from where... Yeah, this is John DiMasio. I'd like to backtrack to how this all started in the town. A couple of years ago, I think it was like the spring of 2005, a bunch of people came before the town council of the city known as the town of Watertown and said, we've got this program, No Place for Hate, and the police chief spoke in favor of it. I think I was even at that council meeting. I attend a lot of them. And it was sort of greeted with a yawn by most of the people and most of the councilors, and it was passed unanimously, and nobody bothered to read the text of this thing. Now, I first got involved in municipal government because I saw that they were getting involved in all kinds of things that had absolutely nothing to do with the administration of the town. So I looked at this and I said, I didn't really even look at the text, but I just saw it as sort of this feel-good measure that we really didn't need, but there's only so many battles you can fight. Ralph and his protest of it sort of brought my attention to what the actual problem with it was. And during the time period that Ralph was flying his flag, the No Place for Hate people actually came in and were recertified. And during that meeting, one of the citizens of the community got up and asked the question of the No Place for Hate folks, because they were talking about all the wonderful things they do in the community, and one of the things was how they help immigrants. So this fellow asks, well, are you talking about what you do for legal immigrants? I'm assuming you're talking about legal immigrants. Or are you talking about illegal immigrants? At which point, he was ruled out of order by the council president and lectured about the use of the word
illegal
immigrant.
Really?
And he goes, yeah, he basically said, you know, you use the word illegal immigrant, that's like saying illegitimate child. I said, well, that makes no sense. I said, what's next? We can't use the word drunk driver to describe someone that's driving under the influence. What are we going to call them? You know, chemically enhanced motorists, you know? So I wrote a column in defense of Mr. Hoover, and I took a couple of shots at the No Place for Hate program. I wasn't as attuned to fighting it so much. I thought the sign was sort of silly, symbolism over substance. We didn't need it. It didn't offend me. I could care either way. I just thought it was silly. But I said in that article that the council president manifested the fears of everybody that thought that this sort of proclamation could lead to an Orwellian oligarchy. And after my article came out, and he read his flag, that's when David Boyajian wrote his letter.
Let me just read the opening thing of this proclamation. Proclamation, quote, No Place for Hate. Do you have an extra copy of this? We could put it up on the website. Anyway, whereas all acts of subtle and overt racism, anti-Semitism, homophobia, and ethnic bigotry substantially undermine our communities in the process of equal justice. And then it goes on about how we want diversity and all of this, that we've got into no place for hate of people who would harass or violate civil rights. The interesting thing is they take overt racism, subtle and overt racism, anti-Semitism, and put in this word homophobia, which is a word that doesn't really exist, and you know, basically means any criticism of the homosexual movement or gay marriage or anything like that, or ethnic, you know, along with anti-Semitism, ethnic bigotry, racism, as if it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, as I say in my article, the ADL has become very radicalized. They've strayed from their original mission, and they do this to try to intimidate people into their, you know, path of radical politics. And a lot of people are offended by this, justly.
But as John has pointed out to us when we talked to him earlier, look at that word subtle in that first
sentence.
Subtle. All acts of subtle and overt racism. Well, subtle, that's a pretty dangerous word. And how do they define bigotry?
Exactly. Well, let's go right down the line.
Illegal immigrants. That's
right,
bigotry.
Right. But let's go right down the line. A subtle form of anti-Semitism. Okay, what happens if in Newton Corner, or anywhere outside a synagogue, a bunch of evangelical Christians, albeit overzealous, are standing outside a synagogue on Saturday handing out tracts that are very fundamentalist in nature about the necessity of everyone, including Jews, to accept Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior? Is someone going to call that anti-Semitic? What happens if Rabbi so-and-so or Father so-and-so or Reverend so-and-so preaches from Leviticus or Deuteronomy and it talks about homosexuality? Is that going to be considered a subtle or an overt act of homophobia? And here's the kicker, bigotry. When Abraham Foxman was interviewed by the Boston Globe regarding the Watertown's considering at that point withdrawing from No Place for Hate on the basis of their refusal to acknowledge the Armenian genocide and their lobbying on behalf of the Turkish government to that effect, he said that it would be bigoted for Watertown to withdraw from the program. So who gets to define? Who gets to define bigotry? Who gets to define?
You are bigoted. You are bigoted if you disagree. Don't agree with the ADL. Yeah.
Their view of tolerance will not tolerate any intolerance towards their view of tolerance. Right. They are the presumptive prelates of pluralism, and they're just the demigods of diversity, and whatever they say goes. Now, here's a point that's important, because most of the folks that I know that are involved in No Place for Hate in my community, they're clueless as to what this proclamation says. And when I go up to them and I say, do you realize this says X, Y, and Z? Because it gets worse down at the bottom. It says, we will maintain a zero tolerance towards X, Y, and Z and so forth, basically repeating the same gibberish. They have no idea the implications, the Orwellian implications of this sort of thing. You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and these things start a little bit at a time. And this violates the most basic of constitutional rights. Judge Brandeis in 1928 said that we have the, and I can't quote the case law, but he said that we have the basic right to be left alone, and that extends to our feelings, our emotions, our thoughts, our opinions, our religious convictions. And this language is extremely dangerous if misused. I'm not saying that the people involved in the programs that are trying to teach kids not to bully one another are trying to do that. I want to make that distinction. I'm not accusing everybody that's trying to do the right thing, even though they're misguided. But this language is very dangerous, and councils routinely pass this stuff without reading it.
So the people are acting on their emotions. They're trying to be nice. They're trying to be kind.
Who can be against hate?
But exactly.
I mean, who can be for hate?
There are people behind this who do want to have it in place and who do want to use it in the future.
But there we go.
With nefarious.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
And another thing is, these people who have these good intentions, they have the responsibility to think about this. We can't really let them off the hook. Some of the worst things in the last 100 years have been done.
The Holocaust.
By people who had good intentions.
Right, yeah.
You know, and
or people
they were,
who ignored things.
Yeah,
Marx's idea was wonderful.
Oh, yeah, they thought they were doing
final analysis,
millions of people have died and suffered by people with good intentions.
Right.
And we can't let these people off the hook. And you're right, a lot of these people, oh, I'll just go along, I'm not going to think about it. Well, you have to think about it.
When you boil this whole thing down to its simplest form, what they're basically doing is criminalizing other people's points of view. It's
right.
as simple as that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you can pull that in Joe Stalin's Russia. You can't pull that in the United States of America.
We didn't get it. I didn't really get a chance to research this before the program, but it was my intent. And I just wonder how many of the early laws in some of these countries, whether it be the Soviet Union or Germany, pre-war Germany in the 30s, how many of the Nuremberg laws started out as very innocuous, you know, sounding things. Well, how much harm can this really do? That's not what we really mean by this. We're just trying to protect
absolutely.
This interest.
Absolutely.
We're just trying to protect that interest. And so, you know, like you said, how many well-intentioned people went along with things that eventually led down the line
right.
to...
And, you know, it's you're absolutely right. Being Jewish myself, I am ashamed that Jews buy into this stuff because they have historically been the victims of this kind
right.
of thinking. And that's what I point out in my article that showed up in the Jewish Advocate. And it's a terrible situation. So anyway, let's get back to the story. What happened?
So, David, after my first article on the subject, and mostly in response to Ralph, got in the Boston Globe. When you put that flag up, the Globe West did a story
June 24th.
On him. And I wrote this article. And then the following week, there was a letter by this David Boyajian informing Watertown that the ADL was working with Turkey to defeat the Resolution 106, I think it is, for the Armenian recognition of the Armenian genocide. And then after that, it just sort of bubbled. Letters started flowing in. My editor made the mistake of defending the ADL, although he quickly backed off it. In an editorial, I wrote a series of columns about counterfeit tolerance and the lies that were being spread by the ADL, the misrepresentations of their positions, and so on and so forth. And it all came to a head. The council was actually dragged to this issue. They did not want to deal with it. They basically, when these sort of things come before them, they just vote for them because who can be for hate? So you vote for something that says no place for hate. When the Armenian genocide issue came up, there was a groundswell of support to do something about it. And a couple of the counselors had prepared some things. Ultimately, one counselor was able to introduce her proclamation ahead of a resolution that was going to be presented by some other people. And that prevailed to rescind the proclamation. There was a lobbying effort, and basically we packed town hall.
Lot of people don't know that there's a huge Armenian community
sure.
in Watertown.
Sure.
And Peter Katugian, he's not part of it.
Peter actually represents my precinct in
okay.
Watertown.
So yeah, he's Newton and some Waltham.
And
some
Rachel Caprellian is.
It's funny to hear this. Is you know you have this you know muddle-headed town you know city council. That it takes people to actually slapping them across the head to do what they were supposed
well,
to do.
Well, okay.
it takes enough of them.
I work with these guys a lot. Let me defend my counsel. When they're focused on the things they're supposed to be focused on, fixing the streets, getting the parking meters to work, and all those things, they're fine. We might disagree on the outcome of a decision, but when they're focused on what they're paid to do or elected to do, they're fine. It's when they start getting involved in geopolitics or feel-good, you know, stuff presented by Kumbaya Kamazais and granola gurus.
I love that.
Okay?
I've got to remember that.
You can use that. Okay? When they get involved in this stuff, and they just do it to... It's like, get this off the thing. You put it in front of us. We're going to vote for it anyways. But they were dragged to it. Eventually, the council did the right thing. They unanimously voted to rescind their ties with No Place for Hate. Now, let me be clear, because me and Ralph both, at least I do, and I think I speak for you, Ralph, we both stand shoulder to shoulder with the Armenian community in wanting other communities to sever ties for that reason alone, besides the reasons that we have where we think this is problematic. We're not trying to piggyback on their issue or anything like that. We just wanted to talk a little bit about the other reasons why we feel that No Place for Hate, at least the proclamation, as far as I'm concerned, is very dangerous. I do know one thing that my council, that our council did, which was good. The No Place, when they rescinded ties to the ADL, they told the folks that were on the No Place for Hate committee, if you're going to come back with something, another program, you need to reach out to other voices in the community whose views you might not agree with.
Wow.
Okay? So that the whole, if we're going to have an anti-bias program in Watertown, it's going to be Watertown's anti-bias program. And it's going to be Watertown, it's going to include all voices, so that if you're teaching someone to respect someone else's lifestyle, you also have to teach to respect the person that might disagree with that lifestyle. So that, I'm hoping, is the direction that they go in if they come back with something.
Actually, I mean, the direction, excuse me, that they ought to go in is, we're not in the business at all.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Who really needs it? When you really come right down, who really needs it? People, you know, that's what we have churches for.
Yeah.
You know, teach people to do the right thing.
We don't need our government
your mother and
to tell
father,
us what we,
you know, when you're a little kid, hey, don't do this, don't do that. Yeah. I don't need these guys to tell me how to think and how to act and what my views should be. And when you read some of this stuff, like they say, well, we must push diversity, which is another code word, like
what
a multicultural.
What if we don't like diversity?
Well, like I said, when I first went down to the town council that night to make my big complaint, I said, look, as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't care if 75% of all the people in Watertown were redheaded Irishmen named O'Toole. Why should I care? Who cares? Why should anybody care? But the diversity police would care, and they'd try and bust that up. Why?
And you know,
just leave people alone.
The funny thing is that Watertown is probably one of the most eclectic and diverse communities you're going to find in Massachusetts. We're 4 square miles, and our No Place for Hate sign are all in the signs of the businesses of the people that work and live there. And Watertown wrote the book on diversity before diversity was in the book.
And I'll bet if you go to the FBI hate crime statistics from 1995 on, which is very easy to find online, didn't do that before we came in here, I'll bet there's not a single hate crime registered in Watertown.
And that's why this is so offensive to us.
10 plus years.
We didn't need a federal mandate or social engineers to become the wonderful community that we were.
And the other thing is that the ADL, you know, if you look at the history of the ADL, is it was created to fight anti-Semitism in like 1905 or something. And that's what they ought to do. I mean, they ought to, you know, what happened was, well, there wasn't enough anti-Semitism, and they're more radical people, and Lenny Zakim, you know, sort of radicalized it in the 1970s and 80s. They need to go back to what they're supposed to do. And, you know, if they were doing their job, they wouldn't be in the Watertown, the Armenian problem, because they'd say, well, all we're worried about is anti-Semitism. We're not going to, you know.
Well, Foxman said, why are you singling us out over other Jewish lobbies on this Armenian situation? Well, other Jewish lobbies, Jinsa doesn't have a sign in my town professing the thing.
Right,
And we have to ask ourselves, really, is it appropriate? Well, that's an understatement. Is it appropriate for any organization that has a mission to protect the interest of one particular special interest or minority to be sort of running this quasi-pluralistic kumbaya?
Isn't that what you just said, Brian? You said there's not enough anti-Semitism for them to fight anymore, so they had to come up with
other
things.
Also a matter of fundraising. Where are you getting your money from?
The truth is the anti-Semitism is where they don't want to go. It's, you know, on the college campuses, you know, all of this stuff coming out of Iran. And those kinds of things, but they don't want to touch that, because that's hard work, you know. It's easy to go in and try to just, you know, spread stuff like this in these communities. It's easier to raise money. You're absolutely right. They have no business in the town of Watertown or in the town of Newton or anywhere else, and you know
they're not needed. Actually, basically, that is a divisive document.
Absolutely,
it is a divisive document, because for everything they are opposed to, you can probably find other people who think, well, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
You know, what's the big
thing? The very name, No Place for Hate, that is name-calling. It's floating the idea that there is hate in the community and that there are haters. So they're essentially name-calling. That's what they're telling us, anyone, not to do.
Right.
Name-call. But the very name of the group and the program is hate.
Yeah. Well, actually, even some of the people from the committees are admit the name is horrible. let me kind of, there's this weird dynamic happening with this group, because the people that are typically in the No Place for Hate committees are not exactly ADL people. Some of them even consider the ADL a right-wing group because, because they're Zionists, which, by the way, I am, all right? They're Zionists, and they believe in the state of Israel and defending Israel, and a lot of these liberals that are running No Place for Hate programs, they're all about defending Palestinian rights, so on and so forth, and they don't agree with the ADL on a lot of things. In a lot of ways, I think that the No Place for Hate program was started by the ADL. And this is speculation on my part, and I suppose it's wrong for me to impugn Abraham Foxman's motives. He does a good enough job himself. But I think this whole thing was started as by the ADL as a public relations ploy to keep people distracted from what the ADL is doing foreign policy-wise. I mean, that's really what they are. They are a foreign policy lobby for Israel, and oddly enough, I might agree with a lot of their foreign policy positions, except for this Armenian genocide situation. But well, this is a public relations scam.
I think it's more AIPAC that does that stuff.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't believe that's the reason they did it. I think that the earlier thing is a fundraising thing, something to give.
That's possible.
Their radicals to do is more likely. Anyway,
something to win the radicals or the liberals back to their cause.
And you know, and believe me, they make a lot of money off of this in their fundraising
and
stuff. There's
all kind of stuff in the background you have to wonder. Yeah. I looked at that and I said, well, they're going to do everything they can to push diversity. Now, my first reaction to that was, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Anyway, let me just, you're listening to Mass Resistance Radio. I'm here with, I'm Brian Kamiker here with Amy and our special guests, Ralph Felicia and John DiMasio from Watertown. We're talking about the whole No Place for Hate issue. These are the guys that got the ball rolling. Okay, so we were you mentioned the David Boyajian, who lives in Newton.
Wonderful
man. I know him. He's a good guy. He wrote this letter.
He saw my picture in the paper with the flag. Called me up and asked me what was going on, and I told him. Then he called me up again about two nights later with more questions. And I said, well, look, if you agree with me, how about writing a letter to the Watertown paper and give me a little support?
Okay.
So he did, but I had no idea what his letter was going to say. And then he came up with this, you know, Armenian genocide business, which was totally new to me. And that really started the whole thing going big.
Really? And you had talked about that suddenly these guys reacted when large numbers of people finally said, you know, we really are sick of this.
Well, it was kind of a weird avalanche of events. The letters started to come in from Armenians in the community, and my editor made a kind of, he basically, by almost defending the ADL, was a catalyst to my writing a column, which basically dope-slapped him 6 ways to Tuesday, in which he said we shouldn't be tossing out the baby with the bathwater, and just because a friend lets us down, we don't stop being their friends. And so I really got into, you know, talking about how could we possibly maintain a relationship with a group that espouses counterfeit tolerance. And that eventually stirred the pot even more with some more articles. And really what happened is every time the ADL would open up their mouth with another crazy statement, they would just give us more ammunition. And it finally, you know, the council couldn't help but act.
Yeah, it is interesting how the ADL really got pummeled. I mean, I saw it from the perspective of reading the Boston Globe and reading the Jewish Advocate, and they got just ripped to shreds in the Jewish Advocate, and I was a little surprised at that. I mean, they couldn't say a thing that, you know, they were I've never seen it. And I had thought that they would at least come back on my article. But what they did was they wrote a letter just attacking me personally, you know, saying that you shouldn't let this guy be writing in the Jewish Advocate. Of course, I write in there all the time. But they weren't able to defend any of the things that I actually said. And Tom Mountain also, I think it was, no, it was Tom, some other people, too, had written. Anyway, they got pummeled in the Jewish newspaper.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, this how did it spread to these other towns? How did, I mean, the last thing I ever thought would Newton or Belmont. I mean, you know, it's a Globe. Religion in Newton.
Yeah, no, the Globe picked up on it pretty good. And they had a number of articles on it, sometimes 2 or 3 days in a row. City region or the Globe West section of the paper. And I got people in other towns aware of what was happening in
Watertown. The Boston Globe also ran that editorial saying that, you know, the ADL is absolutely wrong not to recognize the Armenian Genocide. So, as I think I pointed out on my blog, they want to recognize the Armenian Genocide as they should, but, you know, the Globe, of course, doesn't recognize abortion genocide.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, a funny thing about that is that I tried to contact one of the reporters with whom I have a good relationship with the Globe West, and I informed her that, look, there's been a letter in the newspaper this week about this No Place for Hate and the Armenian Genocide, and I said, I would keep an eye on this because it is going to become something. And she goes, no, that's just a local story. It's not news.
It became a national, international.
An international, and I gave her a little bit of ribbing about it. And she goes, yeah, but you didn't even expect it to get this big. I mean, it got ridiculous. I'm sitting there, I think it was the end of August, on the beach, my cell phone goes off, and it's Dave Boyajian calling to tell me, John, the Turkish ambassador cut his vacation short to go and talk to, you know, the Israeli Knesset. I forget what exactly it was. I don't have my facts straight. But, you know, here we are, heads of state meeting and emergency meetings in Israel and this and that. Alka's Ralph flew a flag. Dave wrote a letter. I wrote a couple of articles. And all we were trying to do was, you know, get our town. All I was trying to do is get my council to fix the parking meters in Watertown Square instead of worrying about this, you know, silly campfire kumbaya nonsense.
And, you know, it goes back to, you know, the ADL had rational reasons for doing what they were doing. They were just the wrong reasons. They needed to just not be in this business at all, because it was bound to get them into trouble.
Not only that, but why should an unelected group come into a town and set up the rules and standards for thought and action and speech?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You can't do that. You can't do stuff like that and get away with it.
I've been complaining about this, as you guys have, for a long time, and finally, it's starting to percolate.
I even threatened to sue the town. I was looking for a lawyer.
Well, you know, it's funny. As insane as it's gotten in Watertown, and we are fighting to the death not to become a People's Republic of Cambridge, and we will win. But, you know, one of the things that we haven't done in Watertown, and thank God, is we do not have a human rights commission in Watertown.
Oh, let me tell you.
Okay, I mean, and Boyajian put it best to me one night, a day over the radio. Do you have an army? Do you have a navy? What the heck do you need a human rights commission for? All right? We already have a civil rights division of our Justice Department. We have a Massachusetts Council Against Discrimination. We don't need a bunch of local commissars or an inquisition, a board of inquiry. I mean, I was talking to some fellows from another human rights commission after a meeting, and I'm not going to mention their name or the town, but their job is to read stuff and advise their selectmen about how the implications of something would be vis-a-vis civil rights. The guy had never read the No Place for Hate proclamation, yet he voted for it. Okay, we don't need doorknobs in these positions that couldn't get themselves elected to dog catcher, telling people what they ought to be doing with their lives and what they ought to be thinking.
Absolutely. You know, the human rights commissions have an interesting history. I would imagine that you won't get one in Watertown. What happened? What happened was they got started in the early to mid 90s in these various towns, and they were started by the gay groups. In Newton and some of these other towns, the gay groups started the human rights commissions. They lobbied for them, and they were originally, certainly in Newton, populated by gay activists and public gay activists. This was their way of pushing their thing. And what happened was, as the 90s kept going, the gays, for whatever reason, got sort of bored with that avenue.
Well, that's because they were having a greater impact within the State House, so they didn't
meet. So they sort of moved out a little bit, and they got replaced by the sort of bread and butter kumbaya liberals.
Was Skittle Titty part of this movie? Movement? Skittle Titty? Or Titty?
I don't know.
Was she part of that movie?
I don't know. But I remember, I mean, big, huge, full page, you know, giant pictures in the paper of, here we're starting our human rights commission, and this was this lesbian activist and all of that. And within 3 or 4 years, they were all gone, and it was just you know, the moon bats, as Howie Carr says, who had taken over. And they were just as, pretty much just as bad, but it was different people, and the gays had moved on to whatever other direction they were doing. And since then, these commissions have just sort of kept doing their ridiculous things, but you don't see a proliferation of them because it was the gay activists that really got them started.
I think right now they're populated by very well-intentioned, some of them are very well-intentioned, very nice people, very politically correct, and which is not my bag, certainly. I'm far from being politically correct. But these folks have still not gotten over the fact that Jerry Garcia is dead and Bob Dylan sold out.
Yeah.
You know, that's the point. Well, it's not the 60s anymore.
The other thing is I've gone to some of these Human Rights Commission meetings and tried to, you know, bring up a different point of view, and they do not want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
There was something a few years ago where the mayor of Newton made this terrible speech on Martin Luther King Day about how he was going to drive groups out of Newton that disagreed with him politically.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Till their voices are no longer heard. And this is David Cohen, who is a pretty radical guy. So I went to the Human Rights Commission. And I said, you know, this is what he said. And he's trying to draw, you know, he's trying to keep us from communicating. And
so is he trying to make up for that now by getting rid of No Place for Hate in Newton?
Well, I don't
Same
know.
Guy.
But
doesn't
the,
make
the,
any
the
sense.
Human Rights Commission, they go, oh, no. What did they say? They said, freedom of speech isn't a human right. It's a civil right. We can't help you. You know.
it doesn't matter. It's a right under the Constitution
right.
of the United States. That's what we're governed by.
But anyway, so that's
well, the Constitution doesn't cover human rights, then it covers civil rights. So why do we have a governmental agency at all involved? It's nonsense. Yeah. But let me ask you a question, David, because
Brian,
I'm sorry, I have been accused of being of spreading anti-Semitism because I've been fighting the ADL. Someone responded to a recent article of mine that was published in a few papers, including the Needham Times. And the gentleman said that I was fanning anti-Semitism. And I really don't understand it. He said that I could never understand it, even though I call myself a Zionist, because I'm not a Jewish person. So, Brian, you're a Jewish person, okay? Would you please tell me how I'm being anti-Semitic?
Let me put it this way. If what you're saying is anti-Semitic, what I wrote in the Jewish Advocate must be really anti-Semitic. It's very shameful. A lot of left-wing Jews will use that as a way of demonizing people unfairly, and that's simply what it is. Much like, you know, like other groups have tended to do, and it's. I read the stuff that you wrote. It's not anti-Semitic. I mean, to suggest that is just plain stupid. And, you know, these people need to be called and taken to task for it because, I mean, it simply isn't, you know, anti-Semitism. And too many of these people are crying wolf. And it's, as I said, it's a shameful, disgusting thing. And I try to call people, take people to task for it, and other Jews need to do that too. Is that... So basically, yeah, the stuff that you wrote is fine. You know, it's and these people are just.
I think one of the examples that I'd like to for the listeners to hear, if they didn't get a chance to read any of my material, there was one article in which I was comparing Foxman's statement to fat free lard, because I felt that his statement had no substance, and it was when he called us bigoted for wanting to withdraw from the program. I said it has no substance. It's like fat free lard. And my editor, before he published it, said, do you want to really use that illustration? Because it could be perceived by some as being anti-Semitic. And I said, excuse me? What are you talking about? And I said, he goes, well, lard comes from hogs. And any reference to pork in this particular circumstance, we're talking about Jews, could be perceived as anti-Semitic. Now, how far... the politically correct language police and thought police have to go.
I would have never thought of that. You know,
I mean, maybe Katujan and the whole trans fats thing comes into play with this. I don't know, but
I'm the son of a butcher.
Okay,
and I
an SOB.
I mean, my father and grandfather and great grandfather ran a meat market, and so I heard a lot of talk about meat, and I would have never picked up on that. Yeah. You know,
so, I mean, but anyone's views can be misconstrued to be anti-Semitic, hateful, offensive, and so on and so forth.
I have a question about the No Place for Hate program. If you go on the ADL website, mm-hmm. you can barely find anything about it. You'd think that it's such a big program, not just in Massachusetts, but around the country, that they'd have some sort of central document.
Oh, they used to.
That has this proclamation. Yeah, I think they've taken it down. But here's the other thing. I do know from reading the various towns in Massachusetts little web pages on their No Place for Hate program that they're very proud of. In order to get the status, you have to do three really big things in your town to earn the status of mm-hmm. a No Place for Hate community, and then you have to keep doing them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now what are some examples of those things that they do? They do things like the Laramie Project play, a diversity assembly at a high school, or a forum back before the marriage amendment was overturned. They do a forum on gay marriage in town.
Well, here's
what else has happened in Watertown?
Is that part of the anti-defamation?
Yeah.
They take advantage of these muddle-headed
politicians.
But they
do it secretly, and you don't know, okay, which thing happening in my town is part of their certification.
You know what
process?
They like to call this? They like to call this part of community policing. Okay?
Yeah.
Community policing.
Community thought policing.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we have a wonderful police officer in Watertown that was involved with the program, and I believe his heart was in the right place. They give the cops, I think, $1,000, but this guy spent a couple of hours a week, at least, on the program. But I know that, obviously, when the controversies came up, he was spending more time on it than that. And I know that these guys are getting paid a little bit of change anyways. And so I'm sure that the money that the community spend on this program, and that's a whole other thing. We're talking mm-hmm. about municipal mm-hmm. resources, mm-hmm. taxpayer resources being spent on this. And so, yeah, the police department is involved. They have a member, usually, typically, that's their No Place for Hate officer.
So there's money involved.
Mm-hmm. There is.
Yeah,
there
there's is. There's a small donation of $1,000 given to the community for community policing. But I would venture to say that after a few hours work, that $1,000 gets eaten right up, and so the town mm-hmm. winds up spending resources. They're certainly using public facilities, the schools, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. And you know what? We either got to get this nonsense out of the schools, or we have to balance it.
You know who else is funding this program? At least until recently, I don't know, because so little is available online. I'm not sure if they're mm-hmm. still doing it. But last year and before, the Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation of Massachusetts was a big funder of the No Place for Hate.
Oh,
and
yeah.
guess who
yeah.
their new executive director is?
Oh, yes.
The homosexual activist, former State Senator Jarrett Berrios.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me of one of my favorite ADL stories. I was in Peabody making a speech. It was actually for Joyce Spiliotis, who was running for election. And we were, we were going in there supporting her. So I came to make a speech on the steps of City Hall. And who should be there protesting me but the ADL, No Place for Hate, and Blue Cross Blue Shield holding their signs.
They came marching out of City Hall.
Yeah.
And this is back in 2004. Oh. And in fact, we were absolutely correct. You and another speaker holding a press conference saying the money going to Spiliotis' opponent because she was pro-gay marriage was coming from, national homosexual sources. Sure enough, we've been proven right. The Gill Foundation money has been flooding into the Massachusetts legislature.
And even better, what they did is they found a Holocaust survivor to say in the newspaper that I was anti-Semitic. So I have my own Holocaust survivor to say I'm not.
I got to ask you this. Why did they consider you being for hate when you went up there? Just because of your basic position?
Because I don't agree with them.
All right. So what we've done with stuff like this is to demonize the other guy's point of view.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
that's absolutely all this is. Demonize anybody who doesn't agree with us. That's why it's wrong and un-American.
It is.
You can't have this stuff.
Why
it's so easy for me, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That you could get this, and you get this in a court of law, they'll throw this out in 5 minutes.
Well, unless it's the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court.
Yeah, maybe. Let's do
this. The Ninth Circuit.
Why don't we take a quick break and come back and talk about what people ought to do? Okay, so this is Brian Kamiker, Mass Resistance Radio. I'm here with John DiMascio and Ralph Felicia. We're going to take a quick break and come back and... and Amy.
Yeah, forget me. Yeah, okay.
We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Mass Resistance Radio. We're talking about the ADL, No Place for Hate. I'm with Amy, with Ralph Felicia, with John DiMascio, both of them from Watertown. Started this movement. This has been really interesting. Let's talk about what people ought to be doing. You guys are a couple of, you're a couple of guys, a couple of citizens that got an international incident, moving.
It is pretty amazing. I think that if people can remember this one phrase in their life, I think, especially when it comes to local politics, decisions are made by the people that show up. If you don't show up, someone else is going to make those decisions for you. And your local government really affects you more than your state government or the federal government, more often than not. And if you don't know who your councilman is, then shame on you. So the first thing you need to do is get involved, and whether it be this issue or anything else, whether it's writing a letter to the editor, whether it's attending a council meeting, you need to get involved and look at some of the stuff that people pass. Now, in terms of No Place for Hate, there are a variety of reasons why you may object to the program. We've covered a lot of them. I think the first thing you need to do is contact the people that implemented it in your town and say, hey, listen, we want you to reconsider this, and these are our gripes. And then write a letter to your local paper, make it a little funny because your editor always likes something that'll read well, and you'll get printed.
One thing I'd like to add is you got to convince people not to be afraid of words, because the opposition, their main arsenal is filled with words like hate, racist, homophobic, and so on and so forth. Now, I always tell people, you can call me whatever you want. If I'm right, I'm right, and I'm going to stick with it. I don't care what you call me. You only hit me with a word. And if your best argument is to call me a name, you've already lost the argument. If that's all you've got to say, you've got no argument at all. So I think, people used to say to me, well, do you get any support in your town? Well, all my neighbors, and I don't want to hang them in here, but a lot of the people agreed with me. I said, why don't you back me up? Well, I don't want to get involved. Well, I don't want to get involved, Well, I'm known in the town. I don't want to get involved. And they were afraid of being tagged like me as a guy who hates homosexuals and stuff like that, which I don't hate anybody.
Yeah, they
saw what I was going through. In fact, I got calls and stuff on the blogs in Watertown. I was called a greasy Italian, a failed mafioso.
Oh, my gosh.
A lone wacko. Oh, yeah, this
that,
was from
that
people.
That is real hate speech.
Yeah, this was from people who believed that we should be a no place for hate community. Well, I look at that, and that goes off my back like water off a duck's back. I don't care. Because the way I look at it, I'm defending something for my grandchildren. I want to leave them a country that was at least as good as the one I born and grown up in. And I figured, during the Second World War, guys gave their lives, they shed their blood in the battlefields of Europe and the South Pacific to defend my freedoms, okay? All I'm being asked to do is to put up with being called a name. I'm getting off easy. So I think people got to, don't be afraid of being called a name. Just give it right back. Somebody calls you a racist or something, tell them, so what? That's all. And forget it. Yep, and just go on, and if you think you're right, go on and don't be afraid of name calling. Because that's all they have.
And don't be afraid to challenge them. Let them prove that you're a racist. Because those kinds of accusations are absurd. They basically said about Ralph, this whole movement, that it started out as one man's movement to have the freedom to hate gays. Nothing could have been further from the truth. Now, I might disagree with Ralph on certain issues. We might disagree on certain issues. But we may come at it differently. But I will stand up for your right to say what you need to say and vice versa. Yeah.
And that's something that the other side doesn't want.
That's
is
right.
The right for us to
right,
say or think
right,
what we want. And that's what a lot of this No Place for Hate is all about. People, that's really good advice. People need to not be afraid, and they need to be there. They need to show up. They need to call their representatives. They need to write letters to the editor. They need to do these things because, as you said, if you don't, then other people will do it, and your rights will be taken away.
So this
has really been good. I want to thank you guys for coming. Ladies and gentlemen, this show, Mass Resistance, as I say at the end of every show, it doesn't come for free. Freedom isn't free. We thrive on your donations. And you can help out by going to the website, massresistance.org, and hitting send us, what is it?
Donate.
Donate. donate or send money to Mass Resistance, P.O. Box 1612, Waltham, Massachusetts. That's P.O. Box 1612, Waltham, Massachusetts. This is Brian Kamenker with Amy. We'll be back next week.